listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio wants to know what you care about this election season. We want to ask our listeners one simple question. What do you think candidates should be talking about as they compete for votes? Let us know by filling out our Citizens Agenda survey, and you can be entered into a sweepstakes to win a $50 Visa prepaid gift card. The responses we get from our community will inform our reporting on the November election. We want our coverage to serve our community, and we need your help to make it happen. If you would like to participate and be entered to win $50, go online to bit.ly/KBOOSurvey. Again, that's bit.ly/KBOOSurvey.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today on our weekly roundtable, the market versus the environment, fires, hurricanes, floods, drought, water shortages, land grabs in Africa, Asia, and other parts of the global south for corporate mega farms, monoculture tree plantations, and utter disregard for indigenous peoples and forest dwellers. Who is taking this seriously as people and creatures die? Are movements for social change as well as the political class taking this as seriously as they should? We can't breathe. Racism as a public health crisis with a particular focus on law enforcement who seem to think they are now the new slave catchers. Los Angeles is an epicenter, as many increasingly refer to Donald Trump as the white supremacist in chief. He daily seems to reinforce that title. His latest salvo, revisionist history of the United States. He attacks the late historian Howard Zinn, author of the popular People's History of the United States, as well as the New York Times 1619 Project, and announced that he is establishing a 1776 Commission for Patriotic Curriculum. He said students have to be proud of U.S. history. I guess that means proud of slavery and genocide of indigenous people? Exactly what is he talking about? And his attorney general has contrasted the COVID-19 lockdown with slavery. On the international front, the market and regional military political control versus the rights of Palestinian people. The nexus of Israel, the United States, the UAE, Bahrain, all with eyes on targeting Iran. And the continued ramping it up of the U.S. versus China, and the U.S. takeover of the Inter-American Bank, and the little island nation of Barbados stands up and stands out. Our panelists are Jackie Goldberg, Laura Carlson, and Dr. Gerald Horn. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandari. Globally reported coronavirus cases have topped 30 million. The new figure from a tally by Johns Hopkins University is certainly an undercount, but the survey showed how fast cases continue to rise around the world. Just a little over a month ago, on August 12th, the number of reported cases worldwide stood at 20 million. The U.S. remains the leader in the number of cases and deaths, which are nearing 200,000. The Washington Post reports that the White House canceled a plan to send every household in the country a pack of 5 reusable masks early in the coronavirus outbreak. An administration official told the Washington Post the White House worried the plan would create concern or panic. At a CNN town hall meeting last night in Pennsylvania, Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden once again ripped into President Trump's handling of the pandemic.
The idea that you're going to not tell people what you've been told, that this virus is incredibly contagious, 7 times more contagious than the flu. You breathe the air, you get it sucked into your lungs. What has he done? Imagine, and by the way, Columbia University Medical School pointed out, if he had just acted 1 month, 1 week earlier, he would have saved 37,000 lives. All the way back, and I was on one of your shows, all the way back in March, I was calling for the need for us to have masks, have the president stand and tell us what's going on. But he knew it. He knew it and did nothing. It's close to criminal.
President Trump stepped up his rhetoric on cultural issues as he returned to the battleground state of Wisconsin for the fifth time this year. At a rally last night, Trump called for a statute to ban burning the U.S. flag in protest. That's a freedom that has been protected by the U.S. Supreme Court. And he criticized sports players and leagues for allowing Take the Knee and other demonstrations against racial inequality. Earlier in the day, in a speech at the National Archives to commemorate Constitution Day, Trump derided the New York Times 1619 Project, which aimed to recognize the overlooked consequences of slavery and the contributions of Black Americans. Christina Onnested reports on the Trump speech.
He lamented anti-racism trainings as a form of anti-American indoctrination that shames whiteness.
Students in our universities are inundated with critical race theory. This is a Marxist doctrine holding that America is a wicked and racist nation, that even young children are complicit in oppression, and that our entire society must be radically transformed. Teaching this horrible doctrine to our children is a form of child abuse.
But he failed to mention 246 years of slavery in the U.S., nor did the president acknowledge the ongoing fight against racial injustice and police brutality. I'm Christina Onnested.
A federal judge blocked controversial postal service changes that have slowed mail nationwide, calling them a politically motivated attack on the efficiency of the postal service before the November election. Judge Stanley Baston in Yakima, Washington, issued a nationwide preliminary injunction sought by 14 states that sued the Trump administration and the Postal Service. The states challenged the Postal Service's so-called leave mail behind policy, where trucks have been leaving postal facilities on time regardless of whether there's more mail to load. The judge's order also requires the Postal Service to reinstall any mail processing machines needed to ensure the prompt handling of election mail and to treat election mail as first-class mail. Colleagues of Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny say a bottle of water with a trace of the Novichok nerve agent was found in his hotel room in the Siberian city of Tomsk after he fell ill on a flight to Moscow last month. Navalny later was flown to a German hospital for treatment, where he's now breathing on his own after being brought out of a coma. Navalny's Instagram account said members of his team went to the hotel room an hour after learning he was ill and packed up the water bottles and other items for inspection. There had been previous speculation that Navalny was poisoned at the airport, where he drank a cup of tea before boarding his flight. Democratic House leaders have delayed a vote on a measure to decriminalize and tax marijuana at the federal level. The decision was an apparent attempt to protect moderate Democrats against charges they care more about marijuana than coronavirus relief. House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer said Democratic leaders are committed to bringing the measure to the floor for a vote before the end of the year, but he said right now the House is focused on securing an agreement to address the COVID-19 pandemic and to stave off a government shutdown. The pro-marijuana group Normal lamented the delay, saying it appeared the prohibitionists and concern mongers have carried the day. I'm Eileen Alfandary for Pacifica Radio.
And this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And what I'd like to do now is to go ahead and welcome our roundtable guests. I'd like to welcome Laura Carlson, director of the Americas Program, works with Just Associates, an international feminist organization based in Mexico City. She's a regular contributor to America's Updater, Foreign Policy and Focus, Counterpunch, and several Spanish language publications. She's also a television host and commentator on globalization, the drug war, immigration, and gender issues for various international news outlets. Laura, welcome.
Thank you very much, Margaret.
and Jackie Goldberg, governing board member for the Los Angeles School Board District 5. She is a former member of the California State Assembly and had previously served as a member of the Los Angeles City Council before being elected to council. She served on and was later president of the Los Angeles School Board. Jackie Goldberg, welcome.
Thanks for inviting me.
And Dr. Gerald Horn, Moore's Professor of History and African American Studies at the University of Houston, who has written more than 30 books. His most recently published book is The Dawning of the Apocalypse, The Roots of Slavery, White Supremacy, Settler Colonialism, and Capitalism in the Long 16th Century, published in June 2020. Dr. Horn, welcome.
Thank you for inviting me.
And I don't know if to offer sympathy or congratulations on Donald Trump's latest attack on historians such as yourself, Dr. Horn. It's quite something. All righty.
Well, shout out to Mr. Trump. He's accelerating my book sale.
Right, absolutely. Okay, so we're going to start off actually with the planet emergency, devastation from climate change going into high gear along the U.S. Gulf Coast. Hurricane Sally battered Alabama and Florida, and two people were killed, according to Reuters, and Sally's damage is expected to cost upward of $2 billion. Meanwhile, there are at least two or three other hurricanes forming in the Atlantic Ocean. And wildfires continue to burn across the United States, destroying over 4 million acres of land in California, Oregon, and Washington State. At least 36 people have died because of the wildfires, and more than 4,200 structures have been razed to the ground, according to USA Today. Across the country, in Maine and New Hampshire, there's a severe drought. Across the global south, in Asia, Africa, and Latin America, corporate mega farms and resource extractivists are destroying the environment. They're buying up, tearing up, and exploiting forests and indigenous communities in their pursuit of market dominance. And in the United States, Donald Trump's administration has rolled back and weakened at least 100 environmental protections, including the Endangered Species Act, the Clean Air Act, and regulations on methane emissions. And around the world, corporations are planting genetically engineered trees, including, by the way, right here in the United States, and the oceans are being contaminated. Climate change has also led to the melting of polar ice caps, resulting in rising sea levels. Scientists are now also studying the interrelationship between encroachment into natural habitats and pandemics. And are sea mammals fighting back? Off the coast of Spain and Portugal, there have been numerous reports of killer whales ramming and harassing boats in a series of attacks. And some argue that they're acting in self-defense against human encroachment. So quite a lot going on there. And Laura Carlson, let us start with you, because a question is, how seriously are policymakers, but even movements for change, taking this crisis that we're in? I mean, we are living in the, those of us in California experiencing the wildfires, and people in so many parts of the world, including in the global south, we are living right now in a climate crisis. Laura Carlson.
Well, Margaret, I'm in my childhood home now in Oregon, stuck close to the fires. The air quality index is about 500 out there, which is almost off the charts. We have the worst air quality now in the world, so it can't get more real. You gave a rundown of what's happening. The New York Times estimates that 4 million Americans could be displaced by the climate change. We saw the hottest summer on record with 130 degrees in Death Valley. There was a chunk of ice in Greenland that broke off this 42 square miles deep, and all the floods that we're seeing. Mexico City, my home, is also flooded because of all the alterations in the climate. And I don't think that we are taking it seriously enough, particularly at this moment in the run-up to the elections. Joe Biden has come out clearly in the face of Donald Trump's denials, most recently there in California, where there was a classic line from Wade Crawford saying, I wish science agreed with you, and Trump refused to admit that climate change was responsible for these freakish fires. There's always fires, but not like this. And the winds had something to do with it as well. So Biden has come out and saying that, of course, climate change does exist and that it poses an existential threat. He did not adopt the Green New Deal, but he has adopted some of the elements. And it is rising as an issue, as we see what's happening here. But it shouldn't just be an issue because of the electoral or the news or the weather cycles. It has to be a permanent issue. And it shouldn't just be the reference point should not just be to fight back or to get back at Trump. The reference point should be our lives and the lives of our children. On the side of the movements, while we have seen young people involved in climate movements, and it's been very hopeful at certain points, the degree of mobilization, we haven't seen enough of it now. It's always true that the electoral period kind of sucks the air out of politics in the United States, and especially as close as we are now. But we still need to see more mobilizations and more getting out the vote from young people, beginning to have a more systemic analysis, which is good, and linking it to other issues. But there needs to be more grassroots organizing. Today in the LA Times, Sierra Club and Earth Justice ran an ad pressuring Governor Newsom to take measures to address the climate crisis, but there was no mention of Trump, which I think was a lost opportunity, because there's no question that the worst threat to climate change, not just the effects in the United States and what happens with policy here, but on a global level, would be the re-election of Donald Trump.
Right, and Jackie Goldberg, I mean, when you look at what is happening, and I hope you and your family are okay. I mean, a lot of us breathing in this bad air and smoke, you know, we are getting some health impacts from it. But there is an urgent situation going on. I mean, parts of the Atlantic, Pacific, and Indian Oceans, they've all surpassed records for warmth in March 2020. In California, there were, I think in Woodland Hills at some point this past summer, there was a temperature of 121 degrees. The loss of summer sea ice in the Arctic, now very likely before 2050. And there were even fires going on there, fires happening in the Amazon. Jackie Goldberg, your thoughts on this, and do you think both politicians as well as movements are taking this as seriously as it seems?
No, I don't think they're taking it very seriously. I really don't, and I think they're not going to until after the election. And the reason I say that is because we've had so many climate change deniers for so long that there is not a widespread American acceptance of the fact that we are really in a global crisis, a climate crisis. However, one of the things that reality does is it makes people rethink their positions. And reality is making people in larger and larger numbers understand that the planet is in danger. I think also these land grabs don't get any kind of publicity. You know, you could read three or four major newspapers in the United States, the Washington Post, the L.A. Times, the New York Times, Chicago Tribune. You can read them all every day and not see a single word about the land grabs going on in Africa, particularly sub-Saharan Africa and in Asia. But also in Latin America, it's just different people grabbing the land. In Asia and Africa and America, it's China, it's India. But in Latin America, of course, it's still the United States. What's happening is that available land is being taken, bought, or using in Latin America, it's usually through some company that already owns it, being invested in by the United States private companies. And what they're doing is creating a single tree forest and things that are not sustainable environmentally, so that they are making quick profits at the long-term livelihood of this planet. So I think what's happening is that because there is less coverage, because there's no notion in editorials and major publications that this is something terrible. I watch a lot of nightly news, both right-wing and left-wing, and I don't see anything about any of this. So if there's no information to the American public, and if you have people like Trump running around and saying, well, if you just sweep the floors of the forest of the dead leaves, you wouldn't have these fires, that's just baloney. Now, that doesn't mean that there doesn't need to be proper land management. There does, but it's not the problem. The problem is you can't have a storm with thousands of lightning strikes in Northern California that has never been seen before. You've got white sharks, great white sharks, off the coast of Maine because the water has gotten so hot. I talked to a woman the other day who said, oh, my God, we can't swim in our beaches because there are great whites off of them. We've never even seen a great white in Maine before. It's changing virtually every known belief that people have about what is reality. Once that gets set in, and if we can increase the publication, the information given to Americans, I think those people who are already active in fighting for a green agenda, a green policy, will get much more support. But we need to see organization around this issue, included in this issue, in many organizations that are now single subject organizations, because it is life and death, not for me, I'm going to die before it's gone, but it's life and death for my grandchildren and their children and their children.
Yeah, just such a devastating and sad situation there, Jackie Goldberg. And Dr. Gerald Horn, we have known for quite some time now, even though all of us living on this planet, we all are on the same planet, we know that environmental devastation hits hardest the most impoverished and black and brown people. And this coming on September 21st is the International Day of Struggle Against Monoculture Tree Plantations. But there is, interestingly, a call from several organizations on the continent of Africa saying that a lot of the expansion forecast is to take place in Africa, which is seen as the continent with the most profitable forestation potential worldwide. And this is a study by the African Development Bank. So a group of organizations from African countries, along with the World Forest Movement, they issued an open letter where they want to alert those of us living in the global north about the role Western development agencies are promoting in this. And we know that there's a clear interrelationship between this happening, the attacks of people living in the forest, but also these huge land grabs that are happening on the continent of Africa for mega farms and such. Dr. Gerald Horn, your thoughts on this environmental crisis as it impacts the most vulnerable peoples?
Well, first of all, with regard to Africa, there's the pressing issue of the spreading southward of the Sahara Desert. Desertification, which is obviously causing a major crisis for people and for wildlife as well. But then there's the related question, which is that when we talk about climate change, we have to talk about fossil fuels. And when you talk about fossil fuels, you have to talk about major oil producers such as Nigeria and Angola. And that obviously, that is to say, the use of these fossil fuels then contributes to the warming of the of the planet in general. But to bring it closer to home, I think we have to focus like a laser beam on these energy producers in the United States of America, particularly the Texas oil men. You might have seen with regard to climate change and the spreading of the bad air from the West Coast eastward, which has reached as far east as Washington, D.C., believe it or not, it has also been pointed to as a cause for the perishing, the dying of hundreds of thousands of birds in West Texas and in New Mexico and in southern Colorado. But with regard to the oil question, which is at the root of climate change,
The problem is that the oil market is collapsing. ExxonMobil, formerly a giant and a darling of Wall Street, is probably worth less in valuation than the personal fortune of Jeff Bezos of the Washington Post and Amazon. Part of this has to do with the pandemic. Airlines are buying less fuel because there are less passengers. There are less people commuting because folks are working at home. But that's having a knock-on effect of causing these U.S. oil giants to try to grab a larger market share by, for example, seizing the oil of Venezuela, seizing the oil of Iran. In other words, it's also having an impact on foreign policy, and it's also causing them to double down on their wager to re-elect climate denier number one, Donald J. Trump, to the White House. Look in particular at the Texas oil man Harold Hamm, H-A-M-M, for example, and also reference the point that Mr. Trump's first Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, was an executive at ExxonMobil. Keep in mind as well that to a degree, I think that the movement has tried to press hard on this issue. Recall that a number of institutions, a number of colleges, there's been a new divestment movement, not unlike the divestment movement with regard to apartheid South Africa, seeking to force college endowments to divest from investments in fossil fuels. That has achieved certain successes. It has been slowed down by social distancing and the pandemic, but I dare say that this movement will be re-energized once we're able to go back to a kind of normal.
Right, and thank you for that, Dr. Gerald Horn. And even when we look at what happened with Hurricane Sally hitting the Florida panhandle, you see an old black neighborhood there, black community, was pretty much a lot of damage and almost practically wiped out. And meanwhile, your point about the fossil fuel companies, there are roughly 100 companies that have been the source of more than 70% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions since 1998. And that if fossil fuels continue to be extracted at the same rate over the next 28 years as they were between 1988 and 2017, global average temperatures would be on a course to rise by 4 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. I mean, that's really quite serious there. So I also have to say that I do like the approach to this of the Poor People's Campaign, where they basically put all of the fusion approach of putting together racism, poverty, the war economy, and environmental devastation, because it is true, it is so much of a whole. Well, what we're going to do, we're actually going to take our station break now, and when we come back, what is happening with racism as a public health issue? And also we'll be going to the international front with our panelists, Laura Carlson, Jackie Goldberg, Dr. Gerald Horn. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And that is the late, great Bob Marley, Burning and Looting. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Check out our website at www.sotrueradio.org. And please go there. We have a community calendar. We've got videos. We've got lots of articles. And our handle on Instagram and Twitter at SoTrueRadio. And we are nationwide and worldwide on a SoundCloud. And I'd like to give a shout out today to our SoundCloud listeners in Hendersonville, Tennessee. That's Hendersonville, Tennessee, and internationally to our listeners in Windsor, Canada. It is our weekly roundtable, and our panelists are Laura Carlson, Jackie Goldberg, and Dr. Gerald Horn. Let us start this round actually by just sharing a few clips with you to put in some context what we are dealing with here. Racism is a public health crisis. What's going on? We'll be talking about also what's going on in Los Angeles and the recent salvos from Donald Trump, as well as his Attorney General Bill Barr. Let us go to those clips right now. The first short one from The Independent and the other from CNN.
They want to impose a new segregation, and we must not allow that to happen. Critical race theory, the 1619 Project, and the crusade against American history is toxic propaganda, ideological poison that, if not removed, will dissolve the civic bonds that tie us together, will destroy our country. That is why I recently banned trainings in this prejudiced ideology from the federal government and banned it in the strongest manner possible.
Columbia University scholar Nicole Hemmer knows all about this. She wrote the book Messengers of the Right, and she's with me now. Today, Nicole, we see the president tweeting about the New York Times' 1619 Project. This is, of course, Nicole Hannah-Jones and her colleagues arguing that the country's founding is based on slavery and based and that's been the project for the past year. He says this should not be taught in schools. It's, again, linked to what Fox is telling him on the TV all the time about race.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, I don't think any of us believe that the president has deep thoughts on critical race theory or that he's read the 1619 Project. These have really become watchwords for what the right sees as anti-white racism. And Tucker Carlson is the perfect place to get that message across, because remember, he's the host who says white supremacy is a hoax. So this is the place you go for this message.
I noticed you said on Twitter the other day that the GOP's 2020 message really mirrors the 2018 midterms message about an invasion, about a caravan of migrants invading the country, which obviously wasn't actually happening. How do you see it happening again in 2020?
Yeah, this time, instead of it migrants invading the country, it's minorities invading the suburbs. This idea of a suburban invasion is one of the through lines of the RNC and now the president's campaign message going forward, in order to both scare particularly white suburban women and bring them into the fold.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty clear. And all this talk about the riots are going to come to your town, this fear-based strategy, it all relates to that notion of white identity politics, reinforcing whiteness, protecting white conservative Christians. I just hope people see it for what it is. Nicole, thank you very much.
Right. I don't know. I was about to say amazing. Well, it's not. We're actually going to switch the order around here. And we'll start with our in-house historian. That's Dr. Gerald Horn. Dr. Horn, just your reaction to all of, I mean, because I know when we spoke yesterday about the focus of the today's discussion around race, this news had not broken, right? So I see this as extremely dangerous, what is happening here, and it seems as though Trump is really trying to do, between him and DeVos, we'll talk about her in a little bit, doing what they can to really set a whole set of things back, including indoctrinating a whole set of young people to ignore the real, true history of the United States. Dr. Gerald Horn, your thoughts on this?
Well, I think that Mr. Trump, needless to say, is overstating the impact of these attempts to rewrite U.S. history. I mean, if you look at my work, certainly it's been embraced by the Black community. It's been embraced overseas in particular, but it has not necessarily been embraced by the historical establishment in the United States, to put it mildly. And in fact, what I see happening in the United States is increasingly you have Black intellectuals and Black thought leaders seeking to rewrite the story of the United States, but it's not necessarily being embraced in the United States outside of the Black community. I think not only is the 1619 Project, which in some ways puts the New York Times to the left of the U.S. left in terms of its understanding of the origins of this country, but I also think of the new play and book by Ishmael Reed, the black intellectual from Oakland, which is a send-up and a spoof of Hamilton. Hamilton, of course, is the Broadway smash hit, which seeks to present this view of the founding of this country by having the founders in blackface, so to speak, and it's taken Broadway by storm, it's taken Disney by storm, etc. And so I think increasingly what's happening is that with the election of Donald J. Trump, many black intellectuals in particular, they began to pay attention and hear Madeleine Albright, former Secretary of State, talking about fascism, a warning, and all these other signs of a creeping fascism, and that was inconsistent with the version of history they had been taught, which was basically that there was this grand democracy constructed with a sturdy constitution. And if so, how did we reach to this point where we may be at the precipice of fascism? And that is not something to downplay, because you may have seen the comment by Roger Stone, the president's fixer, who he just pardoned, who says that if it appears that Mr. Trump is losing on Election Day, that he should confiscate the ballot boxes, declare martial law, and nationalize the National Guard. And then you had recently resigned Trump regime official Michael Caputo, who suggested that Trump supporters start buying bullets right now. I'm not sure why they need to buy bullets, but I'm sure you can easily imagine. And then the Attorney General of the United States threatening to indict the mayor of Seattle because supposedly she's been soft on Black Lives Matter, and also encouraging U.S. attorneys across the country to begin to indict Black Lives Matter activists on grounds of conspiracy to commit sedition. And then there are these scattered articles trying to connect Black Lives Matter to the Chinese Communist Party. Now, we're not even touching the surface, because of course, if you look at these militias that are growing like wildfire, they are comprised heavily of embittered veterans. We know that historically, not only in the United States, but worldwide, embittered veterans have oftentimes been the shock troops for a kind of fascism. Recall that Timothy McVeigh, who blew up the federal building in Oklahoma City in 1995, leading to the death of scores, was an embittered veteran. And if you look at the ranks of the Patriot Prayer, which has been patrolling the streets of Portland, or if you look at the ranks of these various militia movements that invaded the state capitol in Lansing, Michigan, just a few months ago, heavily comprised of embittered veterans. And that's not to mention what we talked about on this program before, which is that of the 18,000-plus law enforcement agencies in the United States, according to the Brennan Center at NYU, they're heavily infiltrated by white supremacists and white nationalists. The New York City Police Department Union just endorsed Mr. Trump. And so it seems that we are facing a very combustible and inflammatory situation that has been made worse by Mr. Trump's typically ignorant comments about the teaching of U.S. history.
Yeah, absolutely. Underscoring your point. And I mean, this whole business about the federal officials, as you say, stockpiling munitions, and the Washington Post is saying this heat ray device before clearing out that Washington Square area in Washington, D.C., so that Trump could go pose in front of a church holding up a Bible. I mean, just really outrageous. And Jackie Goldberg will actually go to you next, because, you know, looking at this whole spate of law enforcement killings across the country, there's a lot going on in Los Angeles. To me, very much an epicenter, but it's not getting a lot of national coverage. I mean, if you look at California law enforcement killings of black and brown people on a regular basis, you have a black woman DA, Jackie Lacey, that Black Lives Matter LA has been on outside of her office every Wednesday, I think, for a few years now, because she's doing nothing about it. It has also come out that there are brutal gangs within the sheriffs, which is LA County, and the sheriff's department, that's one of the largest law enforcement agencies in the country, right? And, you know, so it, you know, I'd like your thoughts on it, because it seems as though you know, it's coming across as though the city and the county seems hamstrung in terms of how to deal with all of this. But I'm wondering your thoughts, because a lot of people talk about a coming race war. Some of us think that it's already here. Jackie Goldberg.
Wow, that's quite a load to talk about. But, you know, this isn't new in Los Angeles. We really have had segregationists in Los Angeles, prompted mostly by our real estate group in Southern California. From the very beginning of the end of World War II, the folks who do sell real estate realized that they could make a very big profit if they had segregated housing. And so there were literally home savings and loan literally built two different in Torrance, which is a suburb connected to Los Angeles, built two different identical sets of homes, one for whites only and one that was the integrated one. The integrated one had fewer amenities, cost more, and you couldn't buy in the other group. We had William Parker as police chief. He was supposed to professionalize but during his first 15 years as the head of the police department of Los Angeles, there were more than 100 documented incidents of white supremacist racial violence in Los Angeles. Not a single person was brought to justice by LAPD over that. Parker refused to hire black officers. He would only let black officers partner with black officers. We built freeways going north and south to bring workers to jobs, but nothing east and west to bring Latin and African American communities able to move to the west side more easily. We used every device you can think of to segregate Los Angeles, and the police were a big, big part of it. It is no surprise that we have a problem with the sheriff's department because we've had gangs within the sheriff's department for years and years. It doesn't get much attention because other than the one case that sort of started all of this when he didn't get convicted after we saw a brutal, brutal attack by police against an African-American person, the beginning sort of using video began really, I think, in Los Angeles as a way of saying, we're going to document that what you're doing. You can't just do it in secret, nobody watching, and then say, oh, but it didn't really happen. You're lying. So what's really happening today here in Los Angeles is that there is a pressure, a huge pressure on housing, on economics. The folks that are getting COVID and dying are more likely to be in these segregated, overcrowded communities that were created after World War II as a part of a way to make money on real estate and by a way of making sure that you could tell whites that they would, quote, be protected from the African Americans. I remember a speech of Parker in which he said, we didn't ask these people to come here, when he was talking about African Americans leaving the Jim Crow South to come west. And he talked like they were like invaders. We didn't ask these people to come here. So this is not new in Los Angeles. This is not new in our police force. This is not new in our sheriff department. But I think there are responses. You know, the city of Los Angeles is trying to change what police go out, calls go on, and they've reduced their budget. There's a ballot measure in the county of Los Angeles that will say that 10% of all of the money that goes to law enforcement will be removed and will be used to do things that prevent these kinds of problems from happening by building affordable housing, by providing help with rent for those who can't afford to live in Los Angeles any longer. So there is some fight back. There are some people saying it's time. Black Lives Matter has taken a big, strong leadership position here, but it isn't just that. There are Jewish groups and Muslim groups and all kinds of groups that have worked together historically that are coming together to fight this. But this is no problem, and it is definitely not new to Los Angeles.
Right. And Jackie, before I forget, just wanting to wish you and others in our audience marking the start of, is it Rosh Hashanah?
Rosh Hashanah starts, yes, indeed. Starts
at the end of the day today. That's right.
At sundown. All our holidays begin at sundown.
Right. Okay. And, you know, Laura Carlson, when you look at these police killings, you have Andres Guardado, 18-year-old Salvadoran student worker, shot 5 times in the back in June while working as a security guard. The cops involved were deputies Miguel Vega, who opened fire, and Chris Hernandez, who didn't shoot, but he was also there. Both are deputies at the sheriff's station in Compton, California, that has been accused of being home to a violent deputy gang which calls itself the Executioners. There's also a gang in East LA as well, with the sheriff's unit, and they have tattoos that consist of skulls and Nazi imagery. This according to NBC News, by the way. So Laura Carlson, I mean, a couple of things here. One is that this blue wall of silence doesn't only happen with white police officers, because we could see with the killing of George Floyd, you could see what happened with Andres Guardado, there were police officers of color involved in it as well. So you could have a white supremacist mentality and approach, even though you're a person of color. But I also wanted you to put that a bit in the context of, you know, the rise of these militias, of a wink and a nod by this administration, it seems, to the atrocities by police officers, and the bleed over that might have in places like Mexico and parts of the global south, where we know, and in Latin America, where we know that there are huge issues around abuse of law enforcement. Laura Carlson.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of Los Angeles, it's true, well, that Jackie was saying that this has a long history. And one of the quotes from a community member that caught my attention was, she said, if the killing with so much attention to the matter at this time, that must be their intent. And it is their intent. What it indicates is that in spite of the fact that some reforms are being won, and in general there's greater public consciousness of police brutality and discrimination and racism in general, there's a backlash happening. And that backlash is becoming more and more visible, and of course, it's being framed and it's being supported by the Trump administration and by people around the country who support him. The history speech on Thursday was absolutely appalling. And you could tell by the monotone of his voice as he presented that speech that this speech was carefully prepared, probably by Stephen Miller and some other people, and that it's literally a whitewashing of the United States history. And it's a strategy that has to do not only with mobilizing this day for the electoral period, but it has to do with presenting a program of government for the next 4 years should he win, and for the next who knows how many years from outside of Washington should he not win. So this is a very carefully laid out program. He attacked decades of left-wing indoctrination, and that's synonymous with what is telling the real story of the United States. So he's basically criminalizing the truth in terms of our historic memory, and moving back on what's called American exceptionalism, that has a huge impact not only in the United States. It was really behind a lot of the conquest and the genocide that took place during the settler period, which ideologically still continues, that Gerald Horn has documented. But it also has a huge impact abroad, because it's that idea that we are the United States and we bring democracy, which is often the complete opposite of what happens with this regime change, and that therefore everything we do is right, and the imposition of hegemony of our will is right. We've seen what this means to other countries, the bloodshed, the violation of democracy, and so it's a huge, huge problem. In terms of Barr's statement, that the lockdown was in some way analogous to slavery, again, it's absolutely appalling. Representative James Clyburn of South Carolina says it's incredible as chief law enforcement officer in this country to equate human bondage to expert advice to save lives. But everything has a spin these days, and that spin is spinning more and more out of control in terms of its relationship to truth and in terms of its relationship to basic human values. And that, I think, has been one of the most shocking things that's happened within this week with this whole series of acts. To threaten to charge protesters on sedition, this is an obscure act that he's dredging up in order to threaten these protesters. There's been 200 people charged, probably the majority here in Oregon, in Portland. And he would have brought terrorism charges, except that surely they don't want to set a precedent, since the vast majority of domestic terrorism cases are white nationals. And stretching up this in order to threaten, in order to shut down, in order to twist this idea of what the United States is and what the United States should be. And finally, on the question of what this does in our day-to-day lives and the way we live together, again, here in Oregon, we're beginning to see these white militia roadblocks, in which people, with the excuse that they're protecting against looting, which actually has not been a huge problem so far, armed white nationalists are coming to, are creating roadblocks around their communities, and they're particularly harassing Black people. And they're saying things like, you don't belong here. And these are people who live in their communities. And when they have to go through these roadblocks, they face this kind of armed harassment. Meanwhile, the police are standing right there talking to the militia members without doing anything about it. It's an extremely worrisome situation, and it seems to be ramping up. And it looks to be that that's going to be the kind of polarization we see, not just during the electoral period, but as Trump creates this legacy, this campaign of white supremacy far beyond November.
Right. Thank you, Laura Carlson. And what we're going to do now is we're quickly going to shift to our international front. Just like to let our panelists know, we literally have just about 6 minutes for the three of you. So take that into consideration. And Jackie Goldberg, actually, we'll start with you, because on August 13th, the United Arab Emirates became the third Arab country after Egypt in 1979 and Jordan in 1994 to agree to formally normalize its relationship with Israel. Trump is seeing the agreement that was signed at the White House on September 15th with the UAE, Israel, Bahrain, and the United States as a huge victory for him. And it seems to me, anyway, Jackie Goldberg, that a lot of this has to do with consolidating forces against Iran, but also against the Palestinian, the rights of Palestinian people. Jackie Goldberg.
Absolutely correct. You know, this is called a peace deal, but in order to have a peace deal, you had to be at war. But UAE and Bahrain were never at war with Israel, so I don't know how it's a peace deal. What it's basically, they've all been cooperating. These Gulf states have been cooperating with Israel and clandestinely for years. So this is not a new breakthrough by any means. And it really basically is a military compact. It's a compact in which the alliance says that we're getting ready to confront Iran. Remember, that's the most important thing on Trump's policy, foreign policy agenda, other than loving the dictators around the world. And you know, what the notion basically is that this is a military alliance, and it is a military alliance that threatens Iran, and it is a very complicated situation, but basically it's just a ruse to call it a peace deal. You had to be at war to have a peace deal, and besides that, it's basically aimed at creating a larger and larger former military alliance between Israel, Bahrain, UAE, the United States, and anybody else they can grab in order to make their attacks against Iran more potent and available to them. So I think the whole thing is really just disgusting, because the basis of it is to create a larger and larger network to keep Palestinians from gaining their rights, and to counter any, to make available more military options against Iran.
Right. And Dr. Thank you, Jackie Goldberg. Dr. Gerald Horn, you know, speaking of Iran, there's the ramping up of tensions there, but also in with China. I mean, we see the recent thing about the military exercises near the Taiwan Strait, China's warning to the United States to basically just stay out of it. Just this morning, today, on Friday, Donald Trump announcing that the social media networks TikTok and WeChat will now be barred from U.S. downloads starting Sunday. A lot of ramping up here, Dr. Horn.
Well, the through line that connects these two issues are arms deals. That is to say, Taiwan, the island of 23 million off the coast of China that China claims is its own, has just inked a pact to buy $7 billion in new arms from the United States, and these new arms can actually threaten a good deal of the Chinese mainland. And I agree that with regard to this so-called Abraham Accord with Israel and the UAE and Bahrain, that once again the issue is arms deal. The UAE will get F-35 planes. Israel has an agreement with the United States that if the balance militarily tends to be tipped against it from its perspective, it can buy more arms of a more sophisticated nature from the United States, and by the way, then that technology can then be leaked to China. And if you look at the conflict between the United States and Germany, part of what's at issue is that when Mr. Trump bashes NATO, of which Germany is a member, basically at the essence, at the heart of the complaint is that Germany is not buying enough arms from the United States of America. So it seems to me that if we're going to ever get a grip on U.S. foreign policy, we have to go back, ironically enough, to the words of Dwight David Eisenhower in his attempt to indict the military-industrial complex as he was leaving office.
Thank you. And Laura Carlson, I'm afraid just about a minute and a half or so, but your thoughts on this Inter-American Development Bank and the United States. And also, interestingly, the United States has issued a level 3 travel warning to Barbados. And Barbados and some of the other CARICOM countries have been a thorn in the side of the U.S. in terms of what they try to do with OAS and other regions. So that little island is standing up, but it seems as though the U.S. wants to do some pushback. Laura Carlson, quick thoughts on all this.
The first time in history, going back to the Eisenhower era, there is a U.S. citizen as the head of the Inter-American Bank. It's a violation of all the agreements in which the banks were going to be run by Europeans, by the U.S. and the World Bank, and by Latin America in the Inter-American Bank. So Trump has imposed not only a U.S. citizen who is his foreign advisor, his Latin America advisor in national security, but also one who has openly advocated regime change in Venezuela and Cuba and takeovers. A highly ideological and aggressive person who will be doing the kinds of things you mentioned, punishing nations that are against the United States or that are actually in favor of their own self-determination, and rewarding nations that toe the line. It's a huge loss for Latin America because in the pandemic and the need for economic recovery, this bank will be managing a lot of
yeah.
money and now is sure to have extremely political criteria.
Right. I'm so sorry. I'm going to have to leave it there. But Laura, maybe we can explore this a bit more in a separate segment on next week. We are out of time. I'd like to thank all of our panelists. Today's show produced by me, Margaret Prescott. If you'd like a copy of today's show, contact the Pacifica Radio Archives. I have to thank our team, Kiana Williams, our audio engineer, assistant producer Romero Funes. I hope you get to do something really nice this weekend. Thank you for listening.
listening to Community Radio, KBOO, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud